Copyrighted program created by Rio Grande.
Man, it's Sandy Gale's office calling all cars, attention all cars, broadcast 270 regarding a missing person. Be on the lookout for Pluto Stokop. If it's a person who's home this day, maybe a murder. That's all. Go with you.
If you make the finest mousetrap, the world will get a pass to your door. That's true about mousetrap, gasoline, or any other product. For 2 years, Rio Grande led all other gasolines in percentage of sales increase. Thousands of well-informed motorists have literally beaten a path into the doors of Rio Grande dealers to get police car performance in their cars. Engineers, purchasing agents, police and fire departments, those who trust gasoline, those to whom gasoline means the most, have specified Rio Grande trust gasoline in all their emergency equipment month after month. Accept no substitute for police car performance, except the added mileage, quicker starting, and increased power that Rio Grande Craft gasoline gives. Nothing can stop the monstrous progress of a definitely superior product, and also that's true about Lealine, the 100% paraffin-based motor oil that engine heat cannot break down or cold weather slow down. Patronize your independent Rio Grande dealer from now on. The story we're here tonight has been taken from the confidential files of the sheriff of Snohomish County, Washington. We have in the studios Chief of Police Keaton Bailey and Sheriff Ray Ryan of Ellis. And we have asked Sheriff Ryan to open our program.
I wish to extend to the audience of Calling All Cars the greetings of the Northwest in general and of the state of Washington in particular. The problems of law enforcement are alike regardless of the section of the county in which they arise. And regardless of section, crime is the same losing game in one state that it is in the other. It has always been a mystery to me why a criminal ever gets the idea that he can commit a crime and get away with it. In the story you are to hear tonight, you will see the part played by cooperative citizens in solving our crime. It is the cooperation of such persons and the close, harmonious work of law enforcement agencies that make more emphatic the statement that, regardless of motive, method, or purpose, crime cannot pay.
It is 8 o'clock on a sultry July morning of 1922 in the city of Everett, Washington. Deputy C.A. Bailey of the Snohomish County Sheriff's Office is seated at his desk looking over some report when suddenly the telephone at his side begins jangling.
Sheriff's office. Yes? What does he look like? About how old a man is your husband, Mrs. Stokop? All right, we'll start looking for him right away. But I wouldn't worry about it. You'll most likely find he spent the night with some friend. Shall we do our best?
Deputy Bailey immediately makes a routine check of the jails and hospitals, but fails to find any trace of the missing man. Beginning to wonder if there isn't some real basis for Mrs. Pocock's fears after all, Bailey decides to drive over and see her. The address proves to be that of a home bakery, a modest appearing shop in the center of Riverside, Everett's extensive Greek colony.
I beg your pardon, but are you Mrs. Porter?
Yes.
My name is Bailey. I'm from the sheriff's office.
Oh, yes. You have come about my husband.
That's right. Have you had any word from him yet?
No, no word.
Well, tell me, Mrs. Porter, when did you see him last?
It was about 10 o'clock yesterday afternoon. A telephone call came, and people said he had to deliver some goods in the country.
In the country, huh?
Yes. He left right away in the truck.
What kind of goods was he to deliver? Don't you follow?
Well, not exactly. I think it was mostly sugar and raisins.
What, sugar and raisins? Rather than
all. I found Pete's truck.
Pete's truck?
Yeah. It's under Nickel's new red. Just over the second place. But, I don't see Pete. He was nowhere around.
Oh, I know it. I knew.
Who are you, young man?
Me. I'm Mike Corrales. The land of Pete.
I see. Well, Mike, you better come up with me to headquarters and make your report. Then we'll go back to where you found the truck and look for your brother-in-law.
Yeah. Whatever you say, sir.
My belief that there's some sort of dirty work mixed up in this business, sir. I have Mike Corrales here, boy, who found the truck waiting outside to make his report.
Yeah, he hasn't had him in a minute, Billy. You say this Pete Kilcox is making a delivery of sugar and raisins into the country?
Yes, sir. And that sounds to me like you might be mixed up in the bootlegging racket.
Yeah, it does to me, too. It also puts a different stamp on the man's disappearance. Just what kind of a woman is this wife of his, Mrs. Kilcox?
Well, she's Greek, of course. But she seems to have a fair education. She's very good English.
Uh-huh. A young woman?
About 25, I'd say. She's a tiny little thing. Pretty little picture.
Any children?
There was a boy about 4 and a little girl, not much more than a baby, playing in the corner of the bakery shop. I presume they were hers.
Yeah? Well, let's have this Mike Corrales in.
Okay, sir.
Come on in here, Mike.
Yes, sir. Mike, this is Sheriff McCullough.
How do you do, sir?
Hello, Mike. Now, Mike, I want you to tell us all about how you happened to find your brother-in-law's truck.
Well, Juliana was worried about Pete, and she asked me to look for him. I go to the filling station where Pete kept his gas, and the man, he said he thought he'd gone out for the muckle field.
What did you do then, Mike?
Well, I started out right away, and when I got to the bridge, I saw Pete's truck standing by the side of the road.
But you didn't do anything of the... Oh, never mind, Billy. I'll get it.
Sheriff McCullough speaking.
You did, Billy.
All right, wait there. We'll be right out.
I'm afraid you won't have to search very far for your brother-in-law, Mike.
Is that some information on Chief Folk up there?
Yes, the man who called himself Art Roberts is on the phone. Said he found a body in the woods just back of the truck.
Found a body? In the truck?
Yeah, you better come with us, Mike. If it's Folk up, we'll need you to help identify it.
There's a car right outside, sir.
Okay, let's get going.
Is that Pete Kilcox's truck, Mike?
Yes, sir. That's the one.
There's a man standing beside it. That must be Roberts, the man who phoned you, Sheriff.
Yeah, I might not be.
Well, get up.
You're Sheriff McCullough, aren't you?
That's right.
The body I called you about is right near that path leading into the underbrush, sir. I stumbled on it less than an hour ago.
All right, go on ahead and show us the place. We'll follow.
Yes, sir.
See that train just ahead?
Well, that's where a body is.
Yeah, I think I can see it from here. You got a man's body lying face downward?
That's it, all right.
He's dead, all right.
It's him. That's Steve.
Well, it's plain the killer wasn't taking any chances on his victim living to tell the tale.
His pockets have been pulled out and rifled. Robbery might have been the motive.
Yeah. Was your brother-in-law in the habit of carrying much money around with him, Mike?
Yes, sir. He always had quite a bit of money in his bill for it.
The officers go back to town. An intensive search is begun for a murderer. 2 days after the finding of the body, Sheriff McCullough and Deputy A.C. Little discussed the case in the sheriff's office.
Well, it looks as if we're up against a more difficult job than you'd figured on, Bailey.
Yeah. Trying to pull information out of that Greek colony is like trying to pull a mule away from a hayrack.
Have you been able to find out anything at all?
Oh, nothing much. All my inquiries down there have come up against a brick wall. Either they claim ignorance of the whole business or they meet you with a stony silence.
Yes, I know. In the same way with me.
I was able to pick up a few scraps of information about Pete Kilcox, however.
Well, that's something. What did you find out?
I think, for one thing, that he was considered one of the most representative young men of the colony.
Pretty well thought of, then, I take it.
Yeah. For another thing, I found out from a banker that Kilcox had recently sent $10,000 to Greece to be placed to his credit there.
$10,000, huh? Then he was considerably better off than the modest appearance of his sister would lead you to think.
Yeah. And in addition to that, he had accounts with several local institutions. Now, he was well fixed, all right.
I wonder if his wealth had anything to do with his being killed.
It might have. I think I'll go over and have another talk with Keith's wife. Last time I was there, it was to break the news of her husband's death, and she was too upset to be able to tell me much of anything.
That's an idea, Billy. Go on over and talk with her. There's just an outside chance you might learn something you can use.
Okay, Sheriff. I'll be back later to tell you what I found out.
But Mitchell Pocock had no more information to give. Months slipped by, and then one night, Sheriff McCullough and Deputy Daly drop into a little Greek coffee house. They were talking to the wrinkled old woman who was serving.
Didn't see Pocock used to eat in here pretty often?
Yes, sometimes. Mrs. Pocock is still coming.
Oh, is that so?
But he never touched man who's here at Keith Pocock, huh?
No, I'm afraid not. You know, it's just funny, Phil, so anyone could have wanted to kill Keith. After all, he was a good, hard-working man who thought only of business.
You think so? Maybe that's why he got killed. Maybe he seemed too much. Excuse me. I got to wait on customers.
What do you suppose you meant by that?
Sure, I don't know. Well, let's get back at town.
Yeah. Well, that crack of the old woman has got me puzzled. There was a world of meaning behind the way she said that.
It's just me. Now, let's go to the home base we have to see. Isn't that Eliana Pocock standing in the doorway?
Yeah. Wonder who the young fellow is standing beside her.
Yeah, some friends, I suppose.
Oh, we might as well say hello to her.
Oh, of course.
Good evening, Mrs. Pocock.
Good evening.
I thought perhaps you might have decided to sail for Greece by this time.
Oh, no, I cannot go now.
No?
It would not be the same without Peter. And besides, Joe here, Peter's brother, he's taking you with a shot.
Oh, I see. Well, I wish you all the luck in the world.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night, Mr. Daly.
Yeah, it seems that 3 months' time has made her forget of you. You're careful enough now, Daly.
Yes, I noticed that.
I wonder. Now, wait a minute, Daly.
Oh, what is it?
They just went into the shop together. You can see her wearing the suit across the street here.
Yeah, you can see her silhouette of her, Daly.
If my hunch is correct. Now, there, Daly. You see that? You can see both the silhouettes now.
Well, George, you're right, Sheriff. So that's what the old woman meant when she said Peter thought too much about business.
Yeah, it looks as if I spoke up the slaving away, his brother was stealing his wife.
If that's the case, it may prove to be the motive we're looking for.
At any event, it's worth looking into, and the sooner the better.
Before Daly and Sheriff McCullough can act, however, they are called out of town on another case. And then at 2:30 in the morning, several days later, a barrage foreman in the Greek colony sees flames suddenly shoot up into the sky. The small frame house at the rear of the home bakery is on fire. The police brings in the alarm. Fire apparatus under the direction of Chief Cottle and Lieutenant Blunt respond at once.
Definitely worked fast, Blunt. The frame house is burning like kindling.
I'll work my way around to the north side of it, Chief. The flames aren't so bad there, and I think I can force an entrance.
Well, come along, then. I'll go with you.
Here, this window is as good as any place, Chief. Wait, I'll smash it in.
Can you see anything?
Not yet. The room's full of smoke. Here, I'll climb in.
Here.
I'll give you a hand. Hey, there's something under the bed over there.
Good Lord, it looks like a couple of kids. Get them, Blunt. Hurry. You can pass them out of the window to me.
Yeah, two kids are, I see. A boy and a girl.
They're both unconscious. Suffocation from the smoke.
All right, hand them out. Again. Put these two children out to the full murder squad as quick as you can.
Thank you. Right away, Chief.
All right. Can you look up, Blunt? I'm coming in there with you.
It's like the other side of the house.
There you are, Chief.
I think that door over there leads into another bedroom. The flames have already struck it.
Yeah? Well, let's see if there's anybody in there.
All right.
Chief, look here. There's a man and woman stretched out of the bed. They're dead all right, but it wasn't the fire that killed them.
Good Lord. Their heads are cut, Chief.
Yeah.
This is a case of cold-blooded murder. You take charge of things. I've got to report this to the sheriff's office.
We got here in a hurry, sir.
Yeah, Billy and I just got back to town and we called us again, fellas. So somebody killed Eliana Pocock and her brother-in-law.
Yes? Yeah. I took the liberty of removing the bodies from the house.
Naturally.
For a while there, we weren't sure we could get the fire under control. Start now, though.
How are the children, Carl?
They're dead. Everything was done to save them. They were too far gone. Suffocation.
Oh, that's just good.
Something else I want to tell you, sir. You know that it'll be connected to the murders.
Yeah?
Okay. This fire was no accident. It's what we call a flash fire. Set with oil in a deliberate attempt to conceal the crime.
Maybe it'll be connected to the murder.
Yeah, that's right.
This fire was no accident. What we call a flash fire. Set with oil in a deliberate attempt to conceal the crime.
Hmm. Well, that doesn't surprise me. Well, come on, baby. Let's take a look at the room where the bodies are found.
Well, this sort of complicates matters, doesn't it, Jeff? We had to figure out that Anna and Joe had spotted Pete's death. Now what's the answer?
Well, your guess is as good as mine. If they tried to keep Jeff so they could be together, then who killed them?
Too much for me. Here we are. I think it's the bedroom.
Yeah, it's the bedroom, all right. Whoever did this job did it thoroughly.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder how these pieces of firewood got here. They're scattered all over the floor.
Yeah, I was just noticing them. The bedroom's a funny place for firewood.
Look here, Sheriff. I think we found the murder weapon.
Yeah? What's that?
The piece of firewood I just picked up. The side and one end are covered with blood.
By George, you're right, Billy. There's no doubt in my mind that that's the instrument used to test the skulls of Joe and Eliana.
Can I speak to you for a few minutes, Sheriff?
Oh, hello, Mike. How'd you manage to get in here? I thought there was an officer posted at the door.
There is, but I guess you know who I was. This is sort of a scene with me.
Yeah, certainly is. But what is it you want to see me about?
Well, I saw you and Mr. Bailey coming here, but I followed. I thought you might have some idea who killed my sister.
I wish I did, Mike, but I'm afraid I don't. But now that you're here, you might be able to tell us a few things you want to know.
Sure, if I can.
Now, this fellow, Joe Procopter, when did he come to live at the Bakers? He wasn't here when Peter was murdered.
No, he came just a few days after Peter was killed.
And he was given a room in the house?
Sure.
Didn't you think that was rather strange?
No, why should I? He was his brother, wasn't he?
Yes, I suppose he was. And now, Mike, I think perhaps you'd better leave us here. Mr. Bailey and I have a lot of work to do. We'll let you know the minute we learn anything.
Okay. And thanks a lot, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's not wise, there's no sense in adding to his grief.
That's true. You know, Sheriff, I'm certain this crime and Pete's murder are linked in some way.
Do you think Eliana might have had still another admirer? Someone who wanted her badly enough to kill Pete, and then when Joe entered the picture, gone completely berserk and murdered them both?
More than a possibility.
I got a hunch I may be able to learn something from one of the neighbors. So while you're taking up here, I'm going to see what I can find out.
But you're sure you didn't see anyone either enter or leave the place?
No, I didn't. All I know is that I heard a series of screams about 1 o'clock this morning. In fact, there was a lot. They woke me right out of my sleep.
Well, what did you do after you heard the screams?
Well, I jumped up and ran to the window. It was too dark to see anything, but it sounded like they came from the bakery.
Mm-hmm. About how long have you known Eliana Prokop, Miss Theodore?
Theodore. Oh, I've known her for years. As a girl, she was the belle of the colony. She had beaux below us.
Was there any particular favorite among these admirers?
Well, yes. Eliana took quite a fancy to George Venus. But George was poor, and then when Peter Prokop happened along, a steady young fellow with good prospects, her family insisted that she give up George and marry Pete.
Uh-huh. And how did George, Dunis, get in there? How do you feel about that?
Oh, he took it like a man. In fact, he attended the wedding and later was a frequent visitor to their house. That is, he wasn't there about a year ago when he moved to Morton.
I see. Well, thank you, Mr. Theodore, for your information. Good day.
Disappointed that he had slowed into his hunt, Bailey rejoined Sheriff McCullough, and they returned to the latter's office. As they entered, a man who had been waiting there got up to greet them.
Sheriff McCullough?
Yes?
My name is Perkins. I'm an attorney here in town. I just heard about the Prokop case in the papers. I think I can give you some information that might be of help.
If you can, we can certainly use it all.
You see, Mrs. Prokop is a client of mine. Last September, about 3 months after her husband was killed, she brought a man to my office and explained that she wished to lend him $300 against his cafe. She wanted me to draw up the note.
Uh-huh.
It looked like a routine matter, and I did, she asked. But when the man had gone, she showed me a letter. She threatened me, and I had to give him the money, she told me. But it's the last time I'll do it. If he asks me again, I will refuse.
What was the man's name, Mr. Perkins?
George Dumas.
Dumas? Well, my hunch was a good one after all, sir. Did you see what the letter said, Mr. Perkins?
No, it was written in Greek. But I told her to put it away carefully, explaining that it might be useful in case he made further trouble.
And was there further trouble?
Yes. I thought that was the end of it, but the day before Christmas, Venus came to my office again.
Mr. Perkins, I need money. I need money very bad. I want you to phone Mrs. Prokop and tell her so. Tell her right away. to send me $50.
I'll do nothing of the sort, Mr. Venus. You've gotten all the money from Mrs. Pocock. You're going to get.
Oh, yes, you will, Mr. Perkins. Take the telephone. I'll stay right here until you do.
Well, I'll call her since you insist. But I can tell you right now, it won't do any good.
Just a son. You call.
Mr. Venus, get Mrs. Pocock on the phone for me.
Mrs. Pocock, you will give me money.
Wait and see. I very much doubt it, Venus. Hello, Mrs. Pocock? George Venus is in my office and insists that I phone you. It seems he wants $50 right away. Yes, that's what I thought. Very well, Mrs. Pocock. Goodbye. She says she will not give you another cent, Venus. And furthermore, she says she doesn't want to ever see you again.
He's got to give me that money. He's got it safe in the bank. Ileana, he would give me the money. But Joe, he got Ileana. I fixed Joe.
But he was still receiving his checks against Joe when he left for my office.
And that was the last time you saw him?
Yes, and mighty glad I was of it, too. Any moment I expected to get a knife stuck in my ribs.
Do you happen to have Judge Venus' address, Mr. Perkins?
No. But it's more than likely to be contained in the letter that he broke off told me. If she saved it, as I suggested, and hasn't been burned in the fire, it could still be in her house.
Word is immediately sent out to search for any letters that might have survived the fire in the Pocock home, and luck plays into the officer's hands. For police under Captain Craw discover an undamaged packet of letters in the bottom of a badly charred trunk. An interpreter is called in to translate any that was signed with Venus' name. He promptly lays aside two, which he copies into English.
Two of them, eh? The first one's so terrible, at least what it says.
The date is September 1st, 1922. The address is Morton, Washington.
Morton, eh?
Yes, sir. Evidently, this is the letter Eliana showed to Mr. Perkins.
Huh? What does it say?
Mrs. Eliana and Joe, please, soon as you receive my letter, wire me $300 at once. If you don't send me the money, both you parties are going to be in jail. No joking about it. You know what you have been doing. I lay everything ready if you don't. You're truly George Venus.
Hmm. Now, what about the other letter, Dana?
The second was addressed to Joe instead of Eliana. And its date line shows it was written just a few days after Venus' visit to Perkins.
Well, you can go ahead, please.
It says, friend Joe, learn as for health I am well. After all, I have phoned to you three times to send me $50, but in vain I phoned. As I have my store mortgage, you don't care to help me, for Eliana told me the restaurant can stay closed for a week, and I have lost 7 days. In jail have I gone, but I get out of jail, but you will never get out. You can't fool me with $5 and $10. Can you help me in this situation? The $1,000 was given to have your brother killed.
And what does that you just say? The $1,000 was given to have your brother killed?
So? I guess that suspicion was correct.
Yeah, that would seem to indicate that Joe was in love with Eliana, all right. And that he wanted her badly enough to hire someone to lure Pete into the woods and kill him.
So who was the man, Venus?
That remains to be seen. But go on, baby, finish the letter.
Okay. Think that you are hanging on my neck. The head that you wear is mine. When I get my head, you will have no head. You should know that you did it all, for you didn't let Eliana to help me, and I will treat you as you treated me. Now then, send me $50 or send me the mortgage on my store, so I will put it somewhere else to get $200 to buy. George Venus.
Is that all?
Sure.
Well, I think there's enough in those letters to justify our bringing them in. Arrange to get a warrant for Venus' arrest, will you?
On what charge, sir?
Arson, for the time being.
That same night, Sheriff McCullough and Deputy Bailey travel 200 miles to Morton and bring back George Venus on the arson charge. The next morning, in McCullough's office.
Now, Venus, let's hear why you started that fire in the bakery Saturday morning.
I didn't start that fire. I was in Morton then. Ask anybody there.
And I suppose you didn't write this threatening letter to Mrs. Pocock either.
Not me. Not George Venus. I wouldn't do that thing. Mrs. Pocock and Joe were my friends. I had respect for them.
And you insist you were in Morton on the morning of the fire.
I was in Morton.
All right, boys. Lock him up.
Yes, sir.
Come on, you.
Sheriff McCullough.
Oh, hello, Mike. Come on in.
Yeah.
What's on your mind, Mike?
That was George Venus they just took out of here, wasn't it? I heard the arrest of him.
That's right.
Did he admit he did it?
No. He said he was in Morton when the killing took place.
Well, if Venus said that, he lied. He wasn't in Morton last Friday night. She was cleared in the bakery.
In the bakery? And you proved that night?
Yeah. I was cleaning up when one of the neighbors came in. She wanted some bread for the Juliana, and Venus was arguing about something in the corner and didn't pay no attention to her. Finally, she hardly ended up and asked Juliana to get it for her.
Would the neighbor be willing to identify Venus?
Sure. When I talked to her about the argument later, she said she was very angry about something, and I heard him tell Mrs. Brokop, better be careful. You know what happened to Pete? The same may happen to you.
Later that day, the neighbor identifies Venus. He still clings to his story of being in Morton at the time of the fire. And Sheriff McCullough and company of Philly goes back there to check on it. In Morton, they can find no one to corroborate Venus' story. But they do receive some valuable information from a woman acquaintance of his. Information which they turn to good account when, on returning to others, they again confront their prisoner.
Just what makes you think you could make that little bluff of yours work, Venus?
What is it?
You know what I mean. Trying to make us believe you were in Morton on the night Eliana and Joe were murdered.
But I tell you, I was there. I tell you.
Venus, we know better. Moreover, we ran across a friend of yours that you've been talking pretty freely to.
Who?
Never mind who. When you were hard up for cash, you told this friend you and Mrs. Prokop and Everett would be glad to give you money. Isn't that right?
Mrs. Prokop was my friend, and Joe too.
Oh, your friend, eh? And why did you say to this person, if I told what I knew about Eliana, she'd never have any money?
Who says I said that?
Isn't it true that Mrs. Prokop once asked you to lure her husband out into the country on the pretext of buying raisins and then killing?
That's a dirty lie.
You might as well come clean, Venus. She and Joe are going to give you $3,000 for the job, weren't they?
All right. I'll tell you about it.
That's better.
Well, Eliana, she says to me, George, it's got to be done. She says she's going to do it herself in the house. Only she's afraid. It's going to scare his finger.
I see. So you got him out there on Musclefield Road and pump 5 bullets into him.
Really? No. No. I lose my nerve. I couldn't do it.
Then after you killed Pete and collected your money, you thought you could go on bleeding Mrs. Prokop for everything she had.
That Joe, he made me mad. He took Eliana.
Yeah. You were jealous, too. When Eliana threw you over for Joe and you found out you couldn't get any more money out of him, you thought you'd get even. So you batted him in the head while they were sleeping and then set fire to the house thinking you'd cover up your crime.
They were not sleeping. They were. I mean, I don't know anything about it.
That's all we wanted to know, Dennis. Come on, Daly. What this case needs is a first-class murder complaint.
In just a moment, Chief of Police Daly will conclude our program. Rio Grande Crash is known as the gasoline of police car performance. And wherever you buy Rio Grande Cracked gasoline, you can buy real lube motor oil. Refined from the highest priced mid-continent crude oil, it's de-waxed, de-jellied, super refined, and made available to you at all Rio Grande stations in tamper-proof cans. Get police car performance with Rio Grande Cracked gasoline and real lube motor oil at your independent Rio Grande dealer tomorrow. And now, be clearly.
And as always, Venus has brought the trial before Judge Garth C. Austin. He was found guilty of the murder of Pete, Elmer and Joe, and sentenced to spend the remainder of his life in prison at Walla Walla. Thus ends the story of another crime that did not pay.
The Homer County Sheriff's Office calling all cars, attention all cars to cancellation broadcast 270 regarding a missing person. Discussion of cases now in custody. That's all. Go with you.
This is your narrator, Frederick Lindsay, bidding you good night for Rio Grande.
Rio Grande will present the case of the careless caretaker. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.